Fútbol Américas, live and underway here on ESPN. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar for episode 335 of this fine program. The first where we are officially, Hercules Gomez, 3 years old. That's right, wow. As of last Friday. What a moment.
Wow, what a moment for the show. People already know, Sebby and I go way back more than the show. Sebby, you can't get rid of me. But happy birthday to Football Americas. This is our baby.
This is our baby celebrating 3 years. Shout out to everybody in production as well. I know we've had some departures of late. Shout out to Danny Magana. But without the production crew, we are truly nothing here on Football Americas. All right, so we got lots coming up on this edition of the show. Jeff Kasouf, just seconds away from joining us. We're going to talk about the U.S. women, their big win over Brazil in the Gold Cup final. We got a massive weekend of CONCACAF abroad action, including some big goals for U.S. internationals. And, of course, we have to recap the weekend in both Liga MX and Major League Soccer, where Inter Miami, Herc, got a taste of life without Lionel Messi. And let me tell you, it was not all that sweet. But let's start in sunny San Diego with the final of the W Gold Cup, the first ever. A full house, a legit full house, I'm being told by our producer, Beto, who was in attendance. Pick this one up 10 minutes in. Brazil with the free kick. Duda, her shot. Didn't miss by much there, her.
No, didn't miss at all. Look at that curling right there. Side netting. Brazil putting the pressure early on.
It was actually a pretty good start to this game for Brazil. Here we are in the 22nd minute. Ball's going to fall to Gabby. Her left-footed shot just over the bar.
Yeah, self-inflicted wounds for the U.S. women's national team right there. Like, you can't miss that. And then gets in behind, mishits it. I think Alyssa Nair had it covered.
First half stoppage time. Trinity Rodman going to dig it out of the corner to Emily Fox. Service in. Lindsay Horan rises to meet it. Her header to the back of the net. U.S. up 1-0.
Yeah, Emily Fox just kind of hangs this up there. And Lindsay Horan, she would tell us later that, Alex Morgan, out of the way. I have this covered. Playing that 10 spot, a new role for her. But look at this finish. Beautiful finish. Anticipates over two defenders. Gets goal side of them. And side netting.
Horan with the goal just before the half to put the United States up 1-0. Second half, things getting chippy. Alex Morgan going to draw a yellow card here for the foul.
Yeah, she comes in just late. And Alex Morgan just after this, a little bit chippy maybe. It was in the cards. You see it again. That could have been a second yellow.
You think it should have been?
I think any other game, we're seeing a second yellow. A final, let him play.
Morgan avoids a second yellow as we get another look at it here. Could have been, but the U.S. stays with 11 players. 1 minute later, Morgan subbed off for Sophia Smith, who of course was one of the heroes against Canada. 79th minute, U.S. attacking. Lynn Williams here gonna be ruled offside.
Yeah, Lynn Williams just always finds the space. Such a good runner without the ball. Just a tad bit offside right here. It's a good ball in by Sophia Smith. Watch this, recognizes. You can see right there about a yard offside. Nonetheless, great finish.
U.S. couldn't find a second, so Brazil still with a shot in stoppage time. Debinha on as a sub or free kick over the top.
Yeah, Debinha comes on late. You're thinking this is just meant for her, and just a little too much there.
Brazil, last seconds of the game, desperation mode. But the U.S. defense does the job and clears as the Americans, under interim manager Twyla Kilgore, win the game and the trophy. Final score, 1-0. Here's the captain, Lindsay Horan, after the win.
Yeah, honestly, Brazil gave us a really good game. You know, they were pressing us hard, and it was difficult to find moments to attack, and I think we needed that, and Foxy put in such a good ball. Alex heard me when I said I was back post, so she left it for me, so I give her credit as well. She gets a second assist for it, but it feels good. I think we just needed that in the moment, and the team gutted it out and grinded out that win.
There were ups and downs throughout the tournament, but you guys stayed together, battled, and now you can say you're the champions of the inaugural edition of this Gold Cup. Just what are the emotions and what does this moment mean?
Oh, it's huge. Obviously, it's the first one, so I think we're really proud to do it on home soil and get that that championship. So I'm really proud of the team. And like you said, it's been a hard tournament. We've dealt with a lot of different kind of adversity and ups and downs. And so I'm really proud of the way we came out of it and getting a win at the end.
All right, shout out to our Katia Castorena there, doing double duty, both for ESPN Deportes and helping out in the post-match interviews with CONCACAF. Here we see it, the U.S. making history. They are the champions of the first ever CONCACAF W Gold Cup. For more on the victory and what it means, thrilled to welcome into the show our good friend and colleague Jeff Kasuf. Of course, you can read his work over at ESPN.com, Equalizer Soccer as well. Jeff, what do we make of the U.S. victory, not just in the game, but the tournament overall? Do we feel it was deserved?
Yeah, look, I think it was a professional and efficient performance in that final, and that's what you need from a final, right? Especially you look at, when I look at this tournament as a whole and what they came into this wanting to accomplish, Twyla Kilgore, interim manager, and all the players we heard from, they wanted to simulate the Olympics. They wanted to develop as a team in transition, and they wanted to prepare for the Olympics, and this was the best preparation they were going to get. And I think when you look at this tournament as a whole for the U.S., it's absolutely everything you could have wanted for that, because they got their gut check against Mexico. They played poorly. They lost. Surprised to finish second in the group. Maybe that happens at the Olympics, right? Then you get a tougher quarterfinal against Colombia, which is the team in this Gold Cup that had gone the farthest in the 2023 World Cup. You get Canada in that ridiculous game on that ridiculous field in those conditions in a semifinal, a late game, and then you have to turn around and play Brazil, right? At that point, I think we saw some signs of the U.S. being a little bit gassed. They went back-to-back quarterfinal and semi using the same 11. They only made two changes in the final. Three big games in a week like that. I don't think that they were the best team, certainly in the first half against Brazil. You saw those highlights. I think Brazil knocked on the door, was a bit wasteful in front of net. And look, the U.S. grinds it out. You heard Lindsey Horan use that term. And Horan scores late in that half, and the U.S. wins this game, so and wins this tournament. So I think a really professional performance, and you look at the importance of this tournament as a whole, that performance in the final, for a team with relative inexperience that we're not used to from a U.S. team, I think this is everything you could have asked for. I don't think they're suddenly gold medal favorites, but this is exactly what they needed in terms of experience, and they walk away with the trophy as well.
Jeff, how long have you known Sevi? He's trying to set us up here. Deserve to win. Like, I don't believe in deserving anything in life, let alone a game. When I was playing down in Mexico, there was a saying, las finales no se juegan, se ganan. Finals aren't meant to be played, they're meant to be won. And that's the case here. You don't try to be aesthetic in a final, you try to win a final. And the U.S. women's national team is very good at winning finals. By my estimation, I think that's over 10 for 10 in finals, the last 10 finals. That's a pretty damn good record. They did exactly what they needed to do. Jeff mentioned the first half was a complete Brazilian domination. I actually felt the way they pressed it put the U.S. women's national team in some very compromising positions in that back line. Made them at times look very, very pedestrian. But that second half, it wasn't that the U.S. women's national team played great. It was just they neutralized Brazil. Brazil couldn't do anything. And then they found a way to win, whether it was through an aerial duel or whether it was through route one. The U.S. women's national team does what it always does in finals. They won.
Yeah, and they kept Brazil in check. Remember, this is a Brazilian team that had 11 different goal scorers coming into this game. They had zero shots on target. They had a lot of shots, but they had zero shots on target in 90 minutes against this U.S. team. I'm with you, Jeff. If we go beyond the game against Brazil and we really think big picture, I think there's a lot to take from this U.S. performance in this tournament, especially after the Mexico game, because you can't say beat, but you got the better of three Olympic-level opponents in Colombia, Canada, and then Brazil. And if we think about what this team didn't do at the last World Cup, that to me is truly something. Gold medal favorites? I don't know, but medal contenders now, Jeff, I feel much more comfortable saying than I would have before this tournament started. Primarily because one of the big things we saw, not just at the World Cup, but in the entire lead up to it, was an attack that didn't seem to know how to get things going. Outside of the Mexico game, I think we saw an attack that looked more like what you would expect from the pieces on paper when it comes to this team. To that end, Jeff, if we go into those pieces and kind of the individual performances, who do you want to single out or pick out as an American player that maybe most improved their stock, especially as we think towards Olympic roster decisions, which are what now, maybe 3.5 months away?
Yeah. Look, I hate to point out the obvious, but it has to be Jaden Shaw, right? And I think anybody paying attention to the NWSL knows her quality, has seen her quality. She came into this league at 17 years old, scored in her first three games. She's the first U.S. player to score in each of her first four starts, which occurred in this tournament or carried on in this tournament. So, you know, you look at what Jaden Shaw did, she keeps stepping up to the plate, right? She did it in the NWSL. I think she was at MVP levels at times last year, maybe a little bit inconsistent, had a decent shout for the World Cup roster, but just the timing of the World Cup coming too quickly. But I think it's pretty clear that she's ready for this level. We've seen it not only at this tournament, right? It's not reactionary to just a few games here. We certainly saw it at this tournament, but it's building upon a base and a foundation that she had already laid a little bit with the national team and certainly at the NWSL level. So really impressed with her. She can play wide. She can play centrally. We saw her in the 10 role a little bit on Sunday. She loves to affect the game coming from wide to inside and inverting. And I think she's a special talent. She's a player that could be built around, the entire attack could be built around for some time in the future. And I think we've seen a good number of players in this tournament. Sam Coffey, Corbin Albert, you talk about that final, the double pivot there for all three of the knockout stage games for the U.S. And I think Jenna Neiswanger as well, showing some good stock at left back in different left back roles, right? In the three back a little bit early in the tournament, in a proper four back at left back. So I think we saw a good number of young players, those four specifically, but hats off to Jaden Shaw. I mean, I think the world is starting to discover her, and maybe more of the world will do that as well at the Olympics potentially. But I think that anybody following along throughout the past year or so, year or two, knew that this was coming for Jaden Shaw.
Which is why I was so surprised not to see her start the final on Sunday in her home stadium. I was beside myself. I thought certainly there must be some sort of injury. That's all mute now because it ends up working out. But I agree with Jeff. I think that's the obvious one, how technical she is. She come in from a wide position, play centrally. She's very sound and has a good game IQ. But I was very impressed with Corbin Albert. I mean, for the longest time, we talk about life after Julie Ertz. And it's not going to be a like for like because that's not really her position. That's not really her trait. It's going to be a double pivot, as Jeff mentioned. But her ability in between the lines to stay composed, technically sound, the ability to find and be an outlet. I thought she was ridiculously good on Sunday, especially neutralizing lanes for the Brazilians. I thought she was very good with Sam Coffey in that. And if memory serves me correctly, the only game she did not start was the loss versus Mexico.
We're focused a lot on the young players here, and I think with good reason. But Jeff, I'd like to get your thoughts on Alex Morgan, because I think she improved her stock quite a bit here as well. We remember she was left off the roster to start the tournament only because Mia Fischel goes down with a knee injury. Is she called in? And then she comes in and proves she is still, at least in my opinion, and based on what we saw in this tournament, the number one, number nine. What do you say about Alex Morgan here at the Gold Cup?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly proved as much as she could, right? I mean, you said it, not being on the roster, coming in the day before. I mean, I saw you all talk to her, and she was, you know, headed over to Coachella Valley for that preseason tournament, and keeps on going like it's a pit stop to get to LA because she was needed. So, you know, I think when you look at that, you look at the implication of her not being on the roster, as much as we hear from Twyla Kilgore, and I think, you know, through her, some of Emma Hayes, that all players are in contention, even if they're not in. Obviously, you've got a somewhat major tournament here that you're looking at a different group of players, right? And she comes in, she's getting many starts, many minutes. And obviously, I think we talked about this on the show as well, key for her getting back on the score sheet, because 363 days without a goal at the international level, whether you're young, whether you're a veteran, that weighs on you. And I think we saw some of that release when it happened early in the tournament. Good for her that it did happen early in the tournament. And then the U.S. keeps going back to her. I mean, I think I've said this for years, for at least 4 years now, even back more than that, dating back to the 2019 World Cup. You look at what Alex Morgan does, and I don't think she's ever been fully appreciated for her back to goal play. And I think we saw some of it even comically so in this tournament, right? Where she will draw the foul. There is a bit of gamesmanship, right? But she knows she's going to take that hit because she'll check to the ball. She'll take a defender on her back and she'll draw a foul. She'll turn out, she'll play a teammate. I don't think she's gotten a ton of credit for that because we remember Alex Morgan of 2011, 2012, turn and burn, right? And she's not going to do that at this stage of her career necessarily. So I think she showed that again. She reiterated it is how I would phrase that. And yeah, I agree. I mean, I think when you look at the options at the number nine, I look at Smith, Macario, when she's fully healthy, obviously Mal Swanson coming back, maybe a bit more of a wide player, but there are plenty of players who can play in that nine, plenty of them in this pool that I think are going to be around for a decade or more potentially. But here and now, when you look at who is the U.S. keep turning to, it has been Alex Morgan still.
All right, Jeff, so no doubt about it, right? Tournament's a success for Alex Morgan. Tournament's a success for the United States. But it was the first ever CONCACAF W Gold Cup. For CONCACAF, for the tournament as a whole, can we call it a success?
I would call it a success. I would say we've had some Gold Cups. I know CONCACAF was branding this as first ever, but we were also referencing a Gold Cup where the U.S. beat Brazil. But beside the point from, you know, 20-something years ago, I think this was a huge success. I'm going to be honest. I thought this tournament had the potential to be a letdown. And maybe that's just the past CONCACAF tournaments mm-hmm. sort of in my head, right? I mean, we're so used to a tournament where you've got US in one group, Canada in another group, they steamroll their groups, they get to a final, they play each other, right? It's just so predictable. The reseeding of the quarterfinals was a great move by CONCACAF. It produced some very good matchups, including the US-Colombia game. It didn't just give us a foreshadowed, you know, chalk matchup of US-Canada or whatever. I mean, we still got US-Canada in the semis, right? But I think the reseeding of the quarterfinals and the guest teams, right? So it's good for CONCACAF teams. I think even in those prelim games, seeing a Puerto Rico really have a great moment there. Haiti getting knocked out, a World Cup team, a really talented team. You know, I think we had from start to finish some good games, some good storylines, and really some good matchups. We didn't have a ton of huge blowouts, right? I mean, we're so used to some of those 14-0 games of not that long ago. So I think this was a success for CONCACAF. I do think we should point out that, you know, some of the strongest teams, including one of the finalists, was from CONMEBOL as a guest team, but we're used to that on the men's side with the Gold Cup and guest teams. So yeah, I think that there's a foundation here. For me, for CONCACAF, it's got to be about building consistency because there's a lot of stop-start, whether it's the smaller federations that don't stick with funding their teams, or it's the confederation itself not sticking with a tournament. I think we've got to see this now consistently, and they'll build upon it.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. The South American flavor I thought was great. I was at the majority of the games here in Los Angeles, whether it was Dignity Health or at BMO Stadium. A great atmosphere. The U.S.-Colombia game was great. I think that was a very smartly done thing, inviting the friends from down south. The coming out party for Mexico. Listen, we see this on the men's side, Sebi, how important Mexico is to CONCACAF. This mm-hmm. was a coming out party for the women's Mexican national team, and the draw, the appeal they could have with the Mexican public, which I think is going to be massive for CONCACAF and only going to help it on the women's side. And then finally, I could not agree more on the reseeding of groups. How many times do we see this on the men's side? Men, the men's Gold Cup, take note. You see teams rest players because they don't think the next game matters. Well, it mattered for the U.S. women's national team when they lost to Mexico, because they now are going to face a Colombian national team. Now they're going to face a Canadian national team in the semis. You're in a difficult bracket or side of the bracket. I thought that was brilliantly done, and the men's tournament can learn a lot about that. But overall, massive success.
Wow, look at us showering CONCACAF with love. Let me bring us back to reality a little. Did anybody see the game Wednesday when they played in the rain? That would have been my one knock on the tournament. And maybe some...
Can I add something really quick?
Yes, go on, Herc.
ESPN Deportes, the most watched sporting event ever on the women's side. U.S. versus Mexico. This was a massive success. I'm telling you, growing the game is still something you need to do, and they're doing it right.
Absolutely. And I think Mexico's role in this tournament is a huge part of that success for CONCACAF, as you very clearly pointed out there, Herc. All right, that'll do it for us here. Jeff, thanks for joining us on Football Americas, and we look forward to a continued coverage of the women's game here on the show. We'll see you actually Friday as we're out in Kansas City ahead of the NWSL regular season opener.
See you guys in Kansas City. Thanks.
All right, Herc, let's run it back. Katerina Macario, who Jeff actually mentioned there, with a goal for Chelsea against Everton in the FA Cup. It came 3 minutes, Herc, after she checked into the match as a sub.
Yeah, watch this. Aggie Beaver-Jones beats her defender very easily, but watch Katerina, how intelligent she is. She doesn't go to near space. She lets the defender drift. She actually stops, creates an angle right there. Nice little finish. It looks very simple. Very well done. High IQ.
The game-winning goal there. That's two goals in two games since returning from a 22-month injury layoff for Katerina Macario. There it is, the NWSL regular season opener, Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern time, Kansas City Current hosting Portland Thorns, available on ABC ESPN Deportes, and right here on ESPN Plus.
Ball through, Okafor, he's got support. Pulisic! Chiesa back towards McKennie. He slips it through for Cambiaso! Tom Stach's corner. There's John Anthony Brooks to make it 1-0. The problem for Dial here as Des comes in field. Brilliant goal.
What a weekend for Americans abroad. Goals from Haji Wright, who had two. Alex Endejas, Christian Pulisic, Serginho Dest, John Brooks, who had a goal on a red card. Paxton Aaronson as well. Assist for Weston McKennie, who had a couple. Endejas, who was a big contributor in America's big win over Tigres. Sorry, Herc. And Joe Scally, who had an assist in a crazy 3-3 draw between his Gladbach and Cologne. All right, Herc, as has been often the case of late here on Football Americas, there are tons of Americans to choose from when it comes to who had the best weekend abroad. Who gets your vote?
Haji Wright, come on down. Listen, this is now 13 goals, 6 assists, for Haji Wright in the championship, and I don't think he's getting the credit he deserves. There was a brace this weekend. He was playing a different position early on in the season, more as a winger, not contributing in a central position, getting goals however they come, off of his head, in behind, penalty kicks. He seems to be back to the Haji of old, the Haji we've seen in different places like Turkey, in different moments of the championship. He's being that striker again. And let's not forget, man, I sometimes think fans unjustly have ruled Haji out. He is still the only nine that I can recall since Brian McBride to score a goal in a World Cup. Traditional nine, real nine, because we've seen Clint Dempsey do it. You know, we've seen other guys who have played part-time, Landon Donovan, but Brian McBride, traditional nine, that's the last time you had a center forward for the U.S. men's national team score a goal if it's not Haji Wright. So we got to give this guy his credit. He's got some equity there too.
Yeah, we got to give him credit, right? They always say the championship, hard league to adapt to, and he actually did have some struggles. There was some real concern early on. He might not be the guy. As you mentioned, he's got 13 goals in league play. He's got 14 across all competitions. And Coventry, with Wright doing a lot of the damage, is having a hell of a run in the FA Cup. So his team is having a good season. He's having a good season. The question is, Herc, what does it mean for his national team chances? Because we got the CONCACAF Nations League coming up. There's a lot of competition for that number nine spot. Do you see Greg Berhalter calling him in?
I don't. And I don't think that's anything on Haji Wright. Haji is a player that I'm very high on. He's got a certain skill set that we don't see in many players. The size, the speed, the ability to finish right foot, left foot, head, everything like that. And he also has equity. But something tells me that right now the three in Greg's mind are Ricardo Pepi, Josh Sargent, and Fowler and Balogun, any order you would like. But those are the three in his mind. And it's a little unfair. It's unfair because this man has done it consistently and also for Greg Berhalter. But he's also got a bit of history with Greg Berhalter. Do you not remember the game before the World Cup? One of his first two appearances with the U.S. men's national team where Greg Berhalter, and I quote, had this to say after a 45-minute cameo where he was playing in a mud pit, if you recall. It's not nice when players don't capitalize on their on opportunity. It's not nice for the coach. It's not nice for the players. It's nice for the team. He's never criticized another player in the U.S. men's national team setup. Not publicly. He did with Haji Wright. And now I'm not saying that means anything. I'm just saying he doesn't have the benefit of the doubt like other players. And right now, those other players ahead of him, they're hot, or they've got a little bit more equity built in with Greg Berhalter. I don't think it happens.
Let me help you solve the problem here. Just hear me out.
All right.
Why not take four forwards? If you got this many guys who you potentially like, why not, especially when you got so many versatile players, midfielders who can do a couple jobs, wingers that can do a couple jobs, outside backs that can do a couple jobs, center backs who can play outside back. When you have that much versatility in this roster, why not take four forwards, especially, Herc, thinking back to what happened at the World Cup when you had an injury and you're left with Jesus Ferreira for the knockout round games is kind of your only option there. as the number nine, especially when I think if we're being honest about guys who could start for the U.S., I know Ricardo Pepi's good, and I know that Greg Berhalter seems to have some confidence and faith in him, but he started one game all year. Do you see him as a realistic option to start here in Nations League?
Now, I don't know with Greg Berhalter anymore because it depends on the profile of the team that he's playing against. That's what he manages his nines for. I agree with you, Seb, and to strengthen your argument, three of these four nines, three of those guys, whether it's Josh Sargent, Farlon Balogun, or Haji Wright in this case, have all played winger at some point this season. So talk about versatility. There's no need to take a third goalkeeper in my eyes. I'm with you on this one. You got to go with players who you think could, one, be competitive and somewhat hot or stay hot. And all four have proven that this season. I don't think that's a crazy shout at all.
All right. I know last week we promised you an interview with Haji Wright. We're going to conduct that interview tomorrow. So we'll bring it to you soon here on Football Americas. My best weekend, Herc, goes to Weston McKennie, who had a couple of assists for Juventus in a 2-2 draw against Atalanta. I mean, what more can you say about what Weston McKennie is doing right now? It's his first game back from an injury. Remember the shoulder injury. This guy, whenever he gets hurt, I mean, I don't know what they're feeding him, but it seems like he's immediately healed and immediately contributing. The two assists here are very different, but both very impressive. The first one is just a sensational pass, picking out Chiesa. That's number 10 string puller stuff. The second one is the brains, right? That's the knack. Lays it in off his chest for the assist. And if you look at the total overall productivity, Herc, it is very impressive. He now has 7 assists in league play. That's tied for second in Serie A. A couple months ago, the conversation around Weston McKennie was, look at what he's done. Juventus didn't have a use for him, and he's got a role within the team. We got to change that conversation now to, this guy is one of the best midfielders, or at least in the conversation for best midfielders in a top five league. And that's such a rare thing to say, Herc, about an American. And people can come at me, and there are people who are more Serie A experts than me on this, but he's one of the best midfielders on one of the best teams in the league. He's producing from a role where, by the way, he's not some free-flying number 10. He's got a lot of defensive responsibilities here, and he's got 7 assists for Juventus. I cannot say enough about Weston McKennie, Herc. And if you would have told me that a player who a couple years ago I hammered for walking out on his team in Nashville during World Cup qualifying would be able to have this kind of turnaround at a club like Juventus, I would have laughed at you. But kudos for him to proving me and others wrong in a major way.
I mean, you, Landon Donovan, Taylor Twellman wanted him off the U.S. men's national team at one point, you know? That's how heavy the criticism on Weston McKennie was. And the narrative for Weston McKennie was he's a guy that's very energetic. He's a guy that's contagious to his teammate. And he gets on the end of things in the final third. This is a whole nother level to his game. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I'll go as far as saying he's one of the best midfielders in the world, you know, in a top five league. I don't think I'd go that far. But you're making a compelling case for a guy that's added this layer to his game. He's very silky in the final third now. I mean, I think it was 10 days ago we had this very same exercise of, you know, best weekend abroad, and he had 2 assists, one of them this one right here, but he separated his shoulder, and I gave him best weekend, and we had a serious discussion. Well, he's injured, and I said he heals quickly. He's done it before. He will be back. And here we are. That's been his season in a nutshell for a guy that was deemed not good enough or not important enough, or not useful to go on a USA preseason tour to all of a sudden being one of the more consistent players that Maxi Allegri has. It's been a ridiculous turnaround from his time at Leeds.
Yeah, doing it in Serie A, and I wouldn't be surprised if he brings some of that to CONCACAF here for the Nations League. Of course, at the beginning of Weston McKennie's career, he was at Schalke. Actually, one year he was there, they made it to the quarterfinals of the German Cup. Speaking of, we've got the German Cup quarterfinals tomorrow right here on ESPN+. Third-tier FC Saarbrücken. Herc, actually, your boy Eric Winalda's former team taking on our boy Casey Keller's former squad, Borussia Mönchengladbach, where Joe Scally and Jordan Pefock now feature. Coverage starts 3:20 p.m. Eastern Time Tuesday here on ESPN+. All right, let's get down to Liga MX. Chivas hosting León with Chicharito, Herc, in the starting lineup. But what would you know? Didn't help. Chivas falling 2-1 against León with goals from Federico Viñas, the ex-América man, as well as Alfredo Alvarado, Piojo Alvarado with the lone goal for Chivas from the penalty spot late. That is now three straight losses, Herc, for Chivas across all competitions and comes days after the brutal 3-0 defeat at home to Club América in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. How loud do we want to ring the alarm bells here, Herc, for producer Beto and his Chivas-loving friends?
It's alarm bells for sure. I mean, 8-1 aggregate in three games. A couple of those at home. Ring those for sure. Listen, I don't know what's more alarming. Is the play or the stark contrast in play? Because they start off red hot. And it wasn't just that they were getting results. It was the style in which they were getting results. It was the durability, was the how dynamic they were, how vertical they were, how intense, how fast they were, how young, how hungry they look, to the opposite. They look fearful. I mean, at least they went back to a 4-3-3 and they're not defending five at the back like they did against America. But I could argue that Orozco should have been sent off in that penalty kick call right there. Mm-hmm. That it's a denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity, Doxo, and he should have been gone and the penalty kick. There is no more double jeopardy doesn't apply. So I could have argued that, but it's everything else. Javier Hernandez gets his start in this game and there's no service. There's no, they don't look in sync. And what's worse is it'd be one thing to just say, this is on the players because today they're ninth in the table. Mm-hmm. And historically in the last decade, that's been their average is ninth. And you've heard me say this before, but to see what Fernando Gago has resulted to, has turned to, and how just diminutive in authority he's looked as of late. And if you want to go one step further, how the fan base is now turning on the players that a week ago they were mauling for autographs and pictures at the airport, like Cade Cowell getting booed coming off this game. And people can sit here and say they all got booed. No, Cade Cowell got booed. It was a trending topic in Mexico. They put it on every news site. There was people in our own ESPN, like Mauricio Imai, who are tweeting about it. There's been a shift in attitude with the fan base to these players and the coach. And what makes it just worse is Fernando Hierro, the sporting director, Real Madrid legend, has yet to even come out and try to ease the situation, making it all worse. And there's not one A block of any show down south that covers Mexican football that's not spoken about the possibility if they lose this next game versus America and the next game versus league leaders Monterrey of Fernando Gago's job being in jeopardy.
Yeah, it's three straight losses. It's one win in their last six across all competitions, Herc. And it's the way this is going down, right? You lose to León at home. You lose to America 3-0 at home. You lose to Cruz Azul 3-0. Yes, it was away, but that game was over in the first half hour. Cruz Azul scored three goals in the first 33 minutes of that game. This is not a team that's being unlucky during this stretch. Certainly over the last three games, it's a team that's getting absolutely worked. And Herc, upcoming here, it's not going to get any easier. We got two against Club America for Chivas, the aforementioned showdown with Rayados. After that, they got maybe a little breather against Puebla. And then after that, it's Pachuca. I mean, if you're Fernando Gago, you're just counting your blessings. The fact that the Clásico Tapatío, the game where if you lost that, you know you'd be fired, isn't until the last game of the season. I think that's the only reason he's going to make it to Jornada 17, the last match day of the Liga MX campaign.
Yeah, I know everybody thinks Puebla is going to be a breather for him. And maybe in the standings, they look like a breather. But historically, over the last 3.5-4 years, Puebla's not been a pushover for Chivas. They've taken it to them. They've actually, the reason that a couple of times in that play-in game, Chivas didn't go any further. They met, I think, three straight tournaments. So I wouldn't go taking that game as lightly if I were a Chivas fan.
Okay. The other thing that I would suggest here with Chivas is the one thing you were looking forward to was Chicharito starting. And the one thing that I brought up recently is I would like to see Cade Cowell starting. Well, in this game, you got both. And Herc, did it really make an impact?
That's what I said last week. Cade Cowell's proven to be better sub. He's not proven to take advantage of the opportunities as a starter that Fernando Gago has provided. That said, it's insane to me that a week before this game, a week before their last game when they played America, He's getting mauled at the airport like one of the Beatles, and now he's getting booed off the field. Certainly for a player like Cade Cowell, this is a learning experience, and he takes that the right way.
As you frequently say, Herc, on this show, Chivas, ninth in the table as we stand through 11 match days in Liga MX. All right, let's move on, shall we? Let's run it back with some members of El Tri that had a good weekend. Santiago Jimenez, Herc, with his 21st Eredivisie goal as Feyenoord won 3-0 over Heracles on Sunday.
Yeah, and this is what he does best, is his movement. Look, he's already pointing, he's already waiting. I don't know what the two center backs are doing. Very lackluster defending right there. It's not going to be on him. He's going to take advantage of this. And it's so fast, it happens so quickly, it doesn't give him enough time to think about it. He just slots it.
3 goals in his last 4 games across all competitions. Feyenoord still 10 points back of PSV in the league. Same game, and a little rock, paper, scissors here, Herc, between Santi and Igor Paixão for a free kick. The Brazilian would end up, I guess, winning the rock, paper, scissors, and good thing, because here's what he did.
I mean, what do you do there, you know? I like the rock, paper, scissors, but
does
the guy
get an assist? Does Santi get an assist?
He gets emotional support. That's what
there
he gets
go.
There.
There we go. It's Feyenoord again, 3-0 winners over Heracles. Luis Chavez with a goal in the Russian Premier League Saturday as Dynamo Moscow beat Akhmat Grozny 2-0.
Oh, if a tree falls in the forest, but there's no one there to hear it. Does it? Oh, never mind. Listen, Luis Chavez has the best left foot in all of CONCACAF. It's a shame not many people get to see it because he plays in Russia. It's a shame there's no European competition. This man deserves more.
Hope Jimmy Lozano's watching. Dynamo Moscow right now third in the Russian league, 2 points back of the top of the table. Hope Jimmy Lozano's watching what's happening in Portugal, where Jorge Sanchez now has had an assist in back-to-back Portuguese league games. He got one this weekend, actually on Friday, as Porto beat Portimonense 3-0.
Yeah, this was a difficult one. He had to wait for John Marty to get injured. Comes in, he's been doing very well. Second assist in as many weeks. Now we got Arsenal coming up. Let's see if we see him there.
Porto third in the Portuguese top flight, 7 points back. Loving this from Jorge Sanchez, who I definitely wanted to stay in Europe. Memo Ochoa, his Salernitana lost 4-2 against Cagliari on Saturday. And in the process, Ochoa conceded his 1,000th career goal at club level, Herc.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. Babe Ruth was like the most struck out player in the history of Major League Baseball, you know, also had the most home runs. This is going to happen if you play long enough.
Exactly. This was also his 300th career appearance in Europe. So good number there for the 38-year-old Mexican goalie. Gerardo Arteaga, who made the move from Belgium back to Liga MX with Rayados, had his first goal for Rayados in a 2-1 win over Mazatlán on Sunday.
I cannot stress to you how difficult of a finish this was. Off the chest and then across his body, smashes it. This is a golazo. Authentic golazo for the left back.
Arteaga, 25 years old, making his case for a call-up out of the Nations League roster drop later this week. And how about Canada? We never forget about Canada. Jonathan David with a brace for Lille in a 2-2 draw. He now has 14 league goals, her 20 across all competitions.
I mean, what do you want me to say, Seb? Oh, Canada. I mean, this is what he does consistently.
His late goal, a big one, as Leo currently sit fourth, fighting for those Champions League spots. All right, I know you love you some Jonathan David. What do you have to say on his latest scoring spree here, Herc?
I'm not surprised. I mean, it's a reality. Listen, this kid is something else. He's already Lille's all-time leading goal scorer. Let's talk about his pedigree for a second. He goes as a teenager to Genk. Genk is a massive team for feeding players into some major platforms, some major organizations. He does well there, scoring a bunch of goals, double-digit goals and assists. From there, he goes on to Lille. I already mentioned how good he's been for Lille. This is his fourth campaign out of the last six where he gets to at least 20 goals. And with that goal-scoring prowess comes an ability to create, to facilitate. I've got no issue in saying today, Jonathan David is the best nine in CONCACAF. And he's making a case of being a historic nine in CONCACAF, of putting himself with some of the all-time great nines like Hugo Sanchez, like Dwight York, like those type of players that have been there before him with this. There's a massive transfer coming for Jonathan David. I can smell it. I can feel it. He's that type of player, man. Anywhere he goes, he's been that guy.
Let me ask you about that potential transfer, because that's what kind of I'm waiting for with Jonathan David, right? He's been at Lille a while. He's proven he can score goals in that league. He's been linked to big clubs all across Europe. And I'm waiting to see, when is he going to get that move and what happens? He's got a contract through 2025, Herc. So you got to figure, from a Lille perspective, this summer is the time to sell this guy, which is also interesting because this summer, from a Feyenoord perspective, is also probably the time to sell Santiago Jimenez. If you go to Transfer Market, and I know you love you some Transfer Market, they are both valued right now at 50 million euros. Who do you think goes for more money this summer, provided both are sold?
Ooh, I think Santi's younger, right?
Yes, 2 years younger. Jonathan David, 24. Santiago Jimenez, 22.
Oh, this is a tough one. I do think Jonathan David goes for more money because I do think his destination is probably England. Ooh. Whereas Santi could have a few other suitors that aren't English football. I like Jonathan David a lot. I think Santi Jimenez has a massive ceiling. But Jonathan David's just a different playing field altogether. You get a more well-rounded nine for your dollar. A nine that could finish, a nine that could facilitate, a nine that's proven to be that man and multiple teams, not just a one-off, in some very good organizations. Mm-hmm. I think Jonathan David right now is the premier nine in this region.
Jonathan David, again, contract through 2025. Santiago Jimenez, his contract through 2027. That could also, of course, impact any potential transfer fees. Just a reminder, ESPN FC available for you 7 days a week here on ESPN+. Dan Kay and the rest of the crew keeping you up to date on all the latest from around world football. Time for some Major League Soccer, Herc. The good, the bad, and the ugly. We start with the good. Atlanta United, 4-1 winners over the New England Revolution, thanks in large part to a hat-trick from Georgios Giakoumakis. The Greek international scored 3 goals in a 19-minute span in the second half. Those were his first league goals, Herc, of 2024.
Watch this finish. Like, what is this? The audacity here and where he puts it. No goalkeeper in the world is stopping that. Yeah, go ahead and celebrate it, Georgie. Giakoumakis, by the way, who was like the third best odds to win the Golden Boot at plus 650, I think it was. I ended up taking Denny Bouanga. It was Messi, Denny Bouanga, then this man right here, and showing us why.
Giakoumakis, I believe, was like 10-1 or something, right? Good value there. Who did you say you picked? Denny Bouanga? He's got, 0 goals through 3 games? Looking good. That might have been a bad pick. Here's bad. Inter Miami losing their first competitive game of 2024, falling 3-2 to Montreal at home on Saturday. No Messi in the lineup or on the bench. Luis Suarez and Sergio Busquets were both second half subs in this one. Jordi Alba did start, played the full 90 and got a goal. Here's Tata Martino afterwards talking about the refs.
En el inicio de la liga, antes de que la liga empiece, nos comimos una hora de charla y me contaron cuál era el espíritu de la liga. El espíritu de la liga hoy no se vio. De la misma manera digo, quien vio esta mañana el partido de Liverpool y Manchester City, que lo deben haber visto todo y vieron la forma y el ritmo que tenía el partido, el árbitro de ese partido dio 8 minutos. Exactamente la misma cantidad que dieron hoy, donde había un equipo que no quería jugar. Y que en cada situación de lateral, de saque de meta, de un full, permanentemente hacía tiempo con la colaboración de un árbitro que se tomaba 30 segundos para anotar el número en la camiseta del jugador amonestado. Entonces, me contaron una cosa y el espíritu hoy yo no lo vi.
All right, Herc. Life without Messi. Not such a breeze for Tata Martino and company. What do you make of his comments and the loss to Montreal?
All right. Comments like this for Tata Martino, a coach of his stature, are unbecoming. Now, I ran into Tata Martino at MLS Media Day in Miami. Definitely recognized me. Definitely had a little slight jab at me right there about the commentating here. I know he watches. I know he listens. I know he reads, et cetera, et cetera. Very unbecoming of a coach of that stature. Are you not going to talk about your dreadful set piece defending? 2 goals were on set pieces. You're not going to talk about how terrible your center backs look about playing Noah Allen as a center back in a line of five? Listen, there are many things we could criticize here. I don't know if time wasting by Montreal or not hurrying up because you had an hour-long talk with God knows who and God knows where, probably from Major League Soccer, about the spirit of the game, blah, 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 blah. You know what this sounds like? No Messi, no party. That's what it sounds like. No Messi, no party. And you'd be right. This was still an entertaining game. This was still a game that had you on the edge of your seat. This was still a game that you thought could maybe go either way. But the way Inter Miami played proved a few things. Inter Miami still must watch, okay? The goals in this game, end-to-end, the misses, everything, it's must watch. But if there is no Luis Suarez, if there is no Sergio Busquets, if there is no Gomez, Diego Gomez, if there is no Leo Messi, the most important player in the league, this team is the same team as before Tata Martino took over.
Did he really compare Inter Miami against Montreal without Lionel Messi, Sergio Busquets, or Luis Suarez in the starting lineup to Manchester City against Liverpool? Is that the comparison that Tata Martino just made? I know it's not a get lost.
Where Doku, puts his foot through McAllister's
chest. If this was a get lost, you know what we'd be saying to Tata Martino. It comes off as sour grapes. And it comes off as rich, frankly, Herc, for a guy who has every advantage an MLS manager could possibly ask for. That he goes, and him and his assistant go, and they yell at the ref, and I don't know, what did they want? Did they want more than the 10 minutes of added time that they got? They played to the 100th minute. You know, I cannot accept that Tata Martino, for everything that he has going for him in Inter Miami, is going to complain here. The one thing I can accept, Herc, is Inter Miami not playing Messi in this game. I think it draws a very, very clear idea of what the priorities are for this team, right? CONCACAF Champions Cup coming up. We got the second leg against Nashville. It's 2-2. And I know there's some people at headquarters who only want to see Messi play on Apple. CONCACAF Champions Cup is not on Apple. But it's very good for me, Herc, to at least see that Inter Miami has it very clear. CONCACAF Champions Cup, way more important than the MLS regular season, especially in March.
Are you telling me 7 games over 34? Who would have thought that? A direct route at a trophy in 7 games? I'm telling you, man. I'm glad that Tata Martino and Inter Miami have it straight, because this is exactly what you should do. International, the way their league is represented internationally, that's got to count for a hell of a lot more than 10 months of whatever we got going on here.
Exactly. I'd put the CONCACAF Champions Cup above MLS Cup. I know some others would not, but that's a discussion for another day. Let's go, Herc, from the bad to the ugly, okay? And these are the teams that are not off to a fast start. Through the first 3 weeks of the MLS season, there are 11 teams, Herc, that have yet to win, but there are 3 teams that have yet to register a point. They are the New England Revolution, New York City FC, and the San Jose Earthquakes. Of those 3, who should we be most worried about?
All right, so I told you and producer Beto, New England Revolution. But then I started thinking about this, like, because the 3 choices here were the Earthquakes, Revolution, and New York City FC. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about, I don't really want to talk about the Earthquakes and John Fisher's team. Because no, John Fisher doesn't care about him. I'm not going to care about him. And then New York City FC, like, Nick Cushing should be worried. But let me tell you why I start second-guessing my pick for New England. New England's the only team out of these 3 that are in another competition.
There,
and they're actually doing well in another competition. But I'll tell you why I did expect a little bit more out of New England. Caleb Porter, who's won pretty much everywhere he's been. Won at Portland, won at Columbus. He knows how to manage a team. He knows how to get the best out of those players. This same team isn't too far removed from a Sapporo Shield season in which they set a record for points with an MVP who they just re-inked with very good young players in Esmir and Noah Buck, who I think can do something in that midfield. You got a Matt Polster, a Mark Anthony Kay. They shouldn't be this bad in league play, regardless of what they got going on in the competition. So I'm going to let them slide. I'm second-guessing myself. I'm kicking myself for picking New England here. But can I just quickly say something on New York City FC? We've got the Boston media market. Okay. We've got the Bay Area media market, if you want to say. But the New York City market, for how irrelevant New York City FC has become. Nick Cushing, since winning MLS Cup and taking the team over, when Ronnie Dial ended up leaving for Belgium. What has he done with this team? How many marquee players do we have in this marquee market? And then you go to their last loss, where Keaton Parks, who's a homegrown player, mm-hmm. a player that's been there for a while. I think we have a lot of young players that don't know how to play for results. We need to effing grind out results and not just bask in one goal leads and shit. Yeah, pretty much. Whose job is that? Mm-hmm. It's the head coach.
But there is good news for New York City. They have new stadium renderings. I mean, that's good news there for New York City. I was surprised that you picked New England, having got past Independiente of Panama, and then obviously what they did in the first leg against Arapuense, 4-0. They're basically into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I immediately regretted it.
Champions Cup. But all right, so there are three teams that have not yet registered a point. I'm going with the San Jose Earthquakes, who lost over the weekend 2-0 at home against Vancouver. Really been a brutal start here for San Jose. They've lost two of these three at home, not just the game against Vancouver over the weekend. They also lost at home to a rival, 3-1 against the LA Galaxy. That's not a way to win over fans. This weekend against Vancouver, in 90 minutes at home, two shots on target with, Herc, 60%+ possession. Again, not the type of soccer that's going to win over fans, whether you're earning points, earning wins, or not. I think they're missing Cade Cowell. And beyond that, Herc, I think they might need a little bit more than just to replace Cade Cowell. We continue to see the links to Carlos Vela. Watching this team, Herc, they absolutely need a player of that type of resume, that type of big splash to get this team going. Because if not, Herc, I think it's going to be a bad, bad year for the team that you don't want to talk about in the San Jose Earthquakes. Do you think Vela's actually going to end up in San Jose, or you think he's using them to get a better offer somewhere else?
I think he's using them. I mean, and if he does end up in San Jose, he's not putting up Christian Espinoza-like numbers from last season. I'll tell you that much. No, they need much more than Carlos Vela. I mean, Carlos Vela would be a good injection of life to a flailing organization, and an organization that doesn't have that life within them right now, doesn't have that spirit about them. Listen, Lucho Gonzalez is a great man. He could be a very good coach. I really like what he's about. This isn't on Lucho Gonzalez. This is on their ownership and the lack of ambition and what you think you have and what you are today. Your organization, you're a franchise that lives off its past, and a past that's not recently removed. We're talking about decades ago. That's the San Jose Earthquakes. It's no longer the Earthquakes of old with Landon Donovan, Dwayne De Rosario, Dominic Kinnear, or even Chris Wondolowski, which they had for many years and ended up being the all-time leading goal scorer of Major League Soccer, and they've got what to show for it. Mm.
There you have it. New York City FC, New England Revolution, and the San Jose Earthquakes, a collective 0-9 so far on the MLS season. Time for a parting shot here on Football America's opening weekend USL Championship, Herc, which of course you can watch on ESPN+. Sacramento Republic hosting Orange County. Nice little in-state rivalry game. And we got a goalie goal, Herc. Shades of Moises Munoz. This is Colin Shuttler of Orange County with the late equalizer.
Do not put Moises Munoz in this category. This guy actually heads it to goal. Moises Munoz was an own goal. This is ridiculous. Look at that. Side of the noggin, into the net. Literally 95 minutes and then 0 seconds. I think it was like 2 seconds. It was in literally the most stoppage time you can get. What a result.
Game ends in a 2-2 draw. Shout out to our friends at Orange County. I still need your Open Cup kit. The dad bod is a real thing. So it's a medium now, no longer a small.
Wow.
Tough times here in the kingdom, Hercules Gomez. All right, programming note, because we've got a big week here on Football Americas. On Thursday, we've got a special here on our normal time. We've got an all-access look at PSV Eindhoven. We've got interviews with Ricardo Pepi, Serginho Dest, Malik Tillman, and Ernie Stewart. So join us on Thursday night. And then Friday, we are live from Kansas City ahead of the NWSL regular season opener Saturday on ABC between the Kansas City Current and Portland Thorns. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thanks for watching this edition of Football Americas, and we'll see you right back here on Thursday night for more.